You know, a long time ago, while Leslie and I were still courting and dating, you know, we had gone out, and we were near Mysore, and we had gone out to one of the places, and it was getting close to the evening, and, you know, we were on a bike, and we were coming back, and, you know, and Leslie asked me to stop the bike and look up, and, you know, and the sky was a riot of colors, you know, all over. You know what happens during, you know, when just before the darkness falls. You know, the sky was a beautiful, beautiful, you know, riot of colors. And we still remember it. I think Leslie says that's the time when she made up her mind to marry me. Probably do. Right. So, likewise, I mean, closer now, when I was in Hawaii about a couple of years back, I went snorkeling, you know, and, you know, and when you go snorkeling and the clear waters there, the beauty of the, you know, the sea life is so breathtaking, you know, the colors, the variety that we have, and, you know, when you see it in real life, right? So I want you to imagine, I want you to imagine something that, you know, that you have seen that was amazing. Can I have some examples from you? Maybe Patrick has seen the Grand Canyon, right? Or Niagara Falls, maybe. Niagara Falls you've seen. Right? Yeah. So what's some of the scenes that you remember of, you know, that you have seen, which is really amazing, which is really breathtaking. Beautiful sunsets. Right. Every evening it's different, and it is it's there. Yeah.
One of the things I always enjoyed watching is flying across the ocean.
Right.
When you see from the 30,000 feet,
yes,
you see these huge ocean liners.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really, really miniature, you know, what we play with, and, you know, and things like that. I don't know, I'm sure pastor and family.
You hear them on, you know, mountains.
Yes.
The Himalayas,
yes.
Massive. Particularly in August. July, August, the whole hillsides will be full of flowers. There are 3,000 species of flowers.
Oh.
So it is extremely colorful. So it's very breathtaking.
I'm sure if we really look inside us, all of us can, you know, identify one or two such amazing views that really, you know, held our attention. I mean, just imagine seeing a real big whale, you know, when you are out in the sea, or dolphins jumping out in reality, or, you know, of course, the Himalayas, so maybe even Ooty for that matter, right? So, you know, so when you see the real thing, there is this feeling of awe, there is this feeling of, you know, awesomeness. Now imagine, I'm sure when we see these things, our first reaction is to try and capture it in a camera, right, or a cell phone or whatever it is. But imagine, say, after a couple of years, looking back at a photograph of that, can it ever match the real experience that you had? Can a two-dimensional photograph ever give you the same feeling that you had when you saw the real thing? You can't. You can't. And that is what Jesus accomplished on the cross. That's really what Jesus accomplished on the cross. You know, Jesus replaced the copy, the photograph, the two-dimensional thing that we can look at. He replaced the worship. He replaced the temple. He replaced the copies that was handmade by his own atoning sacrifice on the cross. So we are focusing on the theme of what did Jesus accomplish on the cross. And this is really what Jesus accomplished, you know, on the cross. So let's turn to Hebrews. Let's turn to the book of Hebrews. Let's Let's read Hebrews 9, and I will be meditating on 9, 1 to 15. So let's read it together. Now, Hebrews 9, starting from verse 1. You can read it aloud, you can read it quietly, whichever way, but read it together with me, please. Now, the first covenant had regulations for worship and also an earthly sanctuary. A tabernacle was set up. In its first room were the lampstand, the table, and the consecrated bread. This was called the holy place. Behind the second curtain was a room called the most holy place, which had the golden altar of incense and the gold-covered ark of the covenant. This ark contained the gold jar of manna, Aaron's staff that had budded, and the stone tablets of the covenant. Above the ark were the cherubim of the glory, overshadowing the atonement cover, but we cannot discuss all these things in detail now. When everything had been arranged like this, the priest entered regularly into the outer room to carry on their ministry. But only the high priest entered the inner room, and that only once a year and never without blood, which he offered for himself and for the sins of the people had committed in ignorance. The Holy Spirit was showing by this that the way into the most holy place had not yet been disclosed as long as the first tabernacle was still standing. This is an illustration for the present time, indicating that the gifts and sacrifices being offered were not able to clear the conscience of the worshipper. They are only a matter of food and drink and various ceremonial washings, external regulations applying until the time of the new order. When Christ came as a high priest of the good things that are already here, he went through the greater and a more perfect tabernacle that's not man-made. That is to say, not a part of this creation. He did not enter by means of the blood of goats and calves, but he entered the most holy place once for all by his own blood, having obtained eternal redemption. The blood of goats and bulls and the ashes of the heifer sprinkled on those who are ceremonially unclean sanctify them so that they are outwardly clean. How much more then will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself unblemished to God, cleanse our consciences from acts that lead to death, so that we may serve the living God. For this reason, Christ is the mediator of the new covenant, that those who are called may receive the promised eternal inheritance, now that he has died as a ransom to set them free from the sins committed under the first covenant. So this is the reading for this morning. And let's meditate on this. What does this really, tell us, right? So the author of the book of Hebrews is giving us a description of the old tabernacle. So let me try and give you a visual of that, right? Now, the tabernacle you can there are two versions of the tabernacle, right? This is the old version that was given to Moses in Exodus, right? And it had to be this way because they had to pack up and move. They were not stationary in one place, right? So you had the outer boundary, 7.5 feet high, so that people don't jump in. And there was a first curtain to go in, and then inside you had the brazen altar and the brass laver, and then of course the candle stand, which is the seven stand candle stand. Then after that came the Holy of Holies, or the tent as it is called, and again there was a second curtain or a veil before the people could enter, right? Now, the common people were allowed only to stand outside. That's the outer court, right? And the ordinary priest could enter here, inside this place, which is called the holy place. And only the high priest could enter this place, which is called the Holy of Holies, right? So this was the segregation that was there in the temple. Most of you know that I was born and brought up in a Hindu family. And, you know, the concept in Hindu temples is same, right? There is an outer court. And earlier when the caste system used to be even more severe, certain castes were not even allowed to enter the outer courts even. They could only worship from outside. And then only certain people were allowed to enter the outer courts. And then again, there was an inner court. And then there is something what is referred to as sanctum sanctorum, which is the equivalent of the most holy place. And, you know, so that's the construction of the Hindu temples. And again, for the Muslims too, it is, you know, there are four different places of worship, and, you know, and they have different rules. But of course, for them, God is far away. It's not never close by, and you can't get close to God. So, you know, so this is the overall construction of the temple. And this was the first tabernacle. And then if you go to the, you know, during Solomon's time, of course, there was more permanent structure. The temple was built in Jerusalem, and it was built with a lot of gold and silver and all that stuff. But the concept remained the same. There was this original, you know, the entrance. And then there was this holy place where all those things that we described earlier was there, the brazen altar, the lampstand, the incenses, and then there is this screen to get into the Holy of Holies, and inside the Holy of Holies is the Ark of the Covenant, the mercy seat, and things like that. So the construction remains the same, and the concept remains the same, right? So, let's go to the next slide where I know I'm giving, it's probably easier for you to understand here what was there. And so this is a plan, you know, of the tent or of the temple, right? Now, so this was the worship that Jews were asked to do. This was the whole concept of the worship, right? And what Jesus did is totally turned it around. He said, hey, there is a candle stand. You don't need a candle stand. You don't need light. I am the light of the world. I am the Sun of righteousness. I will make everything bright for you. You don't need the candle stand. I replace the candle stand. The table of the shewbread, there used to be 12 loaves of bread meant for 12 tribes of Israel. He said, you don't need those loaves of bread. I am the bread of life. I am the bread of life for you. You don't need that bread, right? So, and then when we get into the ark itself, he said, you don't need that. I am the covenant. And I, through my righteousness, have replaced what is there in the covenant. And inside the ark, there were this pot of golden pot with manna. Which never goes bad. You know, if it is kept outside, it goes bad. But if once it is kept inside the ark, that never goes bad. But Jesus said, you don't need that. I am the sweet bread of life. So Jesus, what he did is he actually replaced everything in the temple. Everything in the temple he replaced with himself, with his atoning sacrifice, with his righteousness, with his blood that was shed on the cross. So that is what Jesus did. Jesus not only replaced the temple, he also replaced the mode of worship. You know, the mode of worship here, as I said, the common people were allowed only outside the boundary walls. Only the ordinary priests were allowed to come inside the holy place. And only the chief priest, the high priest, was allowed to go into the Holy of Holies. Right? There are even, the high priest also was not allowed to get in without blood. Right? Because he had to atone for his own errors first and then for the errors of the others. Right? History says that when the high priest entered it, he used to actually have a rope tied to his leg, and you know, he used to have the bell with him, and there are people who used to wait outside here, and if the bell stops, they know that he is gone, right? And then they cannot enter the Holy of Holies even to pull out the corpse. So they will use the rope to pull them out. It was that strict. Only some people were allowed. So access to God, access to worship, access to the most holy of holies was controlled because of the sin that people had. And it was the blood that was supposed to give them the right to enter the Holy of Holies. Jesus said, look, I am the high priest. I am the perfect high priest. And I am entering the Holy of Holies, not by the blood of, not carrying the blood of bulls and goats and heifers. I am entering the Holy of Holies with my own blood. And hence, you don't need anything else to access the Holy of Holies. So that is what Jesus did on the cross. He removed all these things. He replaced the artifacts of the temple. And he replaced the worship method in the temple. And he gave us access. He gave us direct access to the Holy of Holies, to the Father. That's what he really did. And you know the events that is described in the book of Luke tell you that, you know, that there was darkness when Jesus was crucified and the veil of the temple was torn when he was crucified. So that's what he did. He removed the veil. He removed the differentiation between common man and God. And he gave us sinners access to God, to worship God in a personal way, which was not available in the earthly tabernacle. So he became the heavenly tabernacle, and he gave us the right to worship the Lord, the Yahweh, in a very, very personal way. In a very, very personal way. So that's what Jesus did on the cross. As we meditate on further on the other verses that come to us, let's remember this. Jesus replaced the earthly copy of the earthly copy that the man made. This is a man-made copy. This is not what it is. But Jesus replaced it with a heavenly tabernacle in himself. Right? So we don't need to really worship, or we don't need to be satisfied with a copy, with a photograph of a veil, or photograph of the Niagara Falls, or photograph of the Manali Hills, or photograph of a sunset. We have the real thing to worship. We have the real thing to worship in Jesus Christ. So let's thank him for what he has done for us and what we have achieved on the cross. Thank you.
Thank you.